Blog Talk Radio.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny.
A little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce. Most people say they hate wearing shoes and would go barefoot if they knew they were allowed. People say it all the time on their social medias, but they are worried that someone will say something to them. So everyone wears the cheapest flip-flops with the least amount of fabric on them. Most people do not even know that it's completely 100% legal to go barefoot into a store. Most people think that driving barefoot is illegal, but it isn't. Driving barefoot actually is safer than wearing most shoes. Going outside barefoot for a walk is one of the healthiest things you could do, but most people are afraid someone will say something. Or they quote the myths and the rumors that their grandma told them years ago. The fact is, there are no laws against driving a car, going to a store, or eating in a restaurant barefoot. So don't give in to bad fashion, hurt heels, or a broken flip-flop. For more information, please check out barefootislegal.org or find us on your favorite social media. Hello everyone, I want to introduce you to our friends at Marty.com. At Marty, you can stock up on all your pantry items and other household items for way, way cheaper than traditional grocery stores. I like that most of the items are organic. Also, I really dig their 1 cent deal of the day. It changes every single day. I recently snagged a 10-ounce bag of dog treats for Chewbacca for a penny. Normally they sell on their site for $7.99. With the upcoming food shortages, this is my favorite place to stock up on canned goods. If you live in the mountain or Pacific time zones, you need to get with Marty.com, M-A-R-T-I-E.com. Look for our link on our FreedomizerRadio.com website and get a $10 free just because I told you to go there. Marty.com. Great deals, good feels.
Just as ungrounded signals wreak havoc on radio communications, there's growing concern that because we are not grounded, we absorb tremendous amounts of electromagnetic radiation from our modern devices. EMF stands for electromagnetic field.
We are all immersed in electromagnetic fields from Wi-Fi, from the wiring in our homes, and it disturbs our electrical balance. We get charged. Inside of our bodies, we get electrically charged. Some people have as much as 20 volts on their bodies, and that's not good for you.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Hello, folks. We are here with Barefoot is Legal Radio. Barefoot is Legal is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the rights and legalities of living the barefoot lifestyle, as well as general support, encouragement, information, and other aspects around living the barefoot lifestyle. Being barefoot is a lot safer than most people think or assume. Now, this doesn't mean that every environment or every situation is it going to be safe to barefoot. There are definitely environments and situations in which it isn't safe to barefoot. And I think that it's important to acknowledge both that barefooting is more safer than a lot of people believe it is because of stigmas and propaganda, while also acknowledging that barefooting is still not always safe given certain situations, certain environments. You know, I'm not going to go to a construction site barefoot, and anybody working in a construction site is going to especially have, you know, steel-toed boots, you know, going to especially protect their feet. And I think the thing that we need to remember, too, is that most shoes are not as safe as, you know, people think they are. You know, especially if we're looking at flip-flops and sandals, you know, as barefooters or just people in general existing in the world, you know, always told, well, oh, you need to at least have sandals on, you need to at least have flip-flops on, because that's safer than being barefoot, when wearing flip-flops especially is not safer than wearing barefoot. And if anything, it can actually be more unsafe. That's simply just by wearing flip-flops. I remember we had a barefooter who, guest speaker, I'm trying to remember all the context, on last year or something like that, whose father is a podiatrist and, you know, was sharing some conversations that they had had with their father, you know, and even their father, the podiatrist, had their own journey of becoming more open-minded around barefooting because of the work that they did and recognizing, you know, issues with people's feet, especially because as a podiatrist who would perform bunion surgeries, a lot of the times, you know, bunions form because people's feet don't fit properly into shoes. Shoes don't properly fit on the people's feet. And this can just be have to do with how a person's feet are naturally, you know, if they're naturally wider set in certain ways, and shoes kind of cramping them and maladaptively, you know, affecting the feet, and how, you know, his father as a podiatrist had started realizing that when he was doing bunion surgeries, a lot of the time they were doing these surgeries to get people's feet to fit back into shoes. Shoes that it never really fit into the first place, and was part of what ended up with their issues. And, you know, and so it was very interesting. And I remember this conversation, sometimes I'll think about it from time to time, just because I think it was just such an interesting, you know, experience conversation, you know, on the show, this guest speaker. And I'm trying to remember when this was exactly, but to just kind of hear his own personal experience as a barefooter and, you know, explaining the, his experiences, you know, with his dad and his, you know, dad's expertise as a podiatrist, somebody, you know, who specializes in feet. And, you know, that's what their doctorate background is, and specifically, you know, like focused on feet. Sorry, it probably came out like word vomit the way I said that. And then even, you know, to hear that, you know, his father as, you know, a podiatrist, a doctor, starting to recognize the validity of barefooting because shoes aren't made or designed for people's feet, and people are often going through surgeries and recovery to be able to fit back into shoes when it's been found that barefooting can actually be an alternative to people who have, you know, bunions or and to avoid having to get, you know, surgeries that are expensive and costly, and also then the recovery process. So I definitely think that's really interesting. But even in general, you know, in that discussion, you know, talking about how, and again, that's just a thing, and flip-flops are not good for your feet. And the way that they pull your feet, it's not good for the muscles, it's not good for the bones. and it can actually cause more issues. And I can definitely say from experience when I was younger, when I was forced to put on shoes and things like that, you know, putting on flip-flops, because it's like I would be barefoot and trying to take them off, you know, whenever I could. But and even I had a pair you know, like my partner had gotten, you know, for in the summer because they were like a dollar. He got them for me just in case, because he was already getting a, you know, a pair for himself. And he was like, well, you know, in case it gets too hot that, you know, you can't stand it. But even then, it's like, I'd rather figure something else out than wear flip-flops, because they are painful. You know, they do negatively affect the muscles, negatively affect the feet, which if you have joint muscle issues, that's going to then affect the rest of the body more, like specifically, you know, more intensely within your experience. But in general, you know, what affects our feet is going to affect the rest of our body, as they are our support system. They are literally the foundation in which our body stands upon. So with our muscular, you know, system and our skeletal system and things like that, and being and like, even with like being aligned in terms of like chiropractically, you know, barefooting does play a huge role. It does play a huge role in helping to have more free mobility of your, you know, joints and your muscles that is more natural to your body and more natural unison with your body and your environment, as you're able to move more freely. And, you know, with, you know, like my joint issues, you know, I've started, you know, tying things around my knees to help my loose joints, you know, kind of give them more support, help them, you know, stay in place better. And, you know, that really does help because, you know, like I'm, you know, have flexibility, I have hyperflexibility, hypermobility issues. But even too, being able to be barefoot and have that more range of mobility in my feet is still important, even with my loose joints and things like that. And almost, you know, especially I would say, for me with being able to allow everything, to move more fluidly with my body, while then also finding ways of adequate support, like tying ribbons and things around my knees in the areas in particular where I need the compression and that support. But shoes, you know, they don't, you know, you typically offer that same kind of support that may be needed shoes limit our range of mobility and things like that. And so, you know, even as somebody that has loose joints and, you know, hyperflexibility, hypermobility, I would definitely say that, you know, being barefoot is still key to that. Having that more natural range of mobility and motion, you know, although it definitely helps. And I've definitely been so ready for the weather to finally warm up. Oh my gosh. Because, so that way I can just, you know, barefoot fully as much as I want to, you know, with how cold it's been, it can be hard, you know, for me with my temperature sensitivity, muscles issues and things like that, how my body responds to the cold, to be able to be barefoot. And, but at the same time being barefoot in the cold with inflammation, and things like that, it can be like a nice ice pack, you know, but in the winter or in, you know, just colder times of the year, it can be harder, especially if you're someone like, you know, me that has these temperature sensitivity issues and then your muscles and your body, you know, just reacts negatively to it. It can be very frustrating. I know that I'm definitely ready and screaming inside for summer and to be able to, you know, just be able to be barefoot fully. It's definitely frustrating, as much as there are reasons in which, you know, I have to wear shoes for my own individualized reasons in my experience. It doesn't mean that they don't still come with issues. You know, there is still constantly having to make sure that I'm, you know, massaging my feet. and I definitely, for anyone that has muscle issues, I definitely recommend it, you know, if you're able to, you know, getting like some kind of massager that you can use for your body, because it really does help. But especially when I'm wearing shoes, I notice that my feet, you need more like attention with like working through the those knots and muscles and things like that. And, you know, what is the experience of my, you know, feet definitely does experience the rest of my body with my joints and my muscles. But that's also an annoying thing that unfortunately had causes me to have to wear shoes more than I like, with my sensory issues, temperature dysregulation, my muscle issues, nervous system fibro, myalgia, all that. You know, there can be a lot of frustrating aspects of that, for sure. And so I think it can definitely be frustrating, because it's like, even when there are reasons in which we may need to wear shoes for our own more personal individualized reasons, or also, you know, just general safety reasons, like, you know, if we're going to a construction site, or if you're in a chem lab, or, you know, places like that, you know, even if you have to wear shoes for a specific reason, it can still cause problems, for sure. It can still be a frustration, and it's been a, you know, a big frustration for me to balance with my overstimulation, with my ADHD, my autism, with balancing being overstimulated. And so much it's like my head wants to explode, but then it's like, oh, I have to have the feet on because it's too cold, or, oh, it's too rainy today and it's too cold for me to not wear shoes, because that'll cause muscle and temperature sensitivity issues that'll affect my feet and then affect the rest of my body because it's too cold today. But and it's also too wet outside, so I at least have to wear, you know, or and it's cold and wet, so I'm wearing socks. But, you know, when the socks get wet, I'm literally going to scream. And so just having to find and balance, it can definitely be very frustrating. And I think, too, as we're just entering spring, I definitely just feel this need more to be barefoot than in the winter, even when the weather is still cold or around the same. And, you know, I recently finished reading a book that I got in for the holidays, and I had mentioned some of it, I think, last week or the week before. I'm not 100% sure. And it was pretty good. But it did bring up, you know, different aspects and studies of how we, the seasons affect people's moods, and not just looking at seasonal affect disorder, which is a very real thing. You know, unfortunately, it's a very real thing that I experience and have experienced for a very long time. It's a very real thing that a lot of people experience. And if you're somebody that has sensory issues, unfortunately, you can be more sensitive to developing seasonal affect disorder, SAD, because of those natural issues with light. If you don't get enough light, or if you get too much light, those are general effects that are going to affect all of us psychologically, circadian rhythm. But there's so many other aspects of hormones and neurotransmitters involved in that, and how light and light exposure and sunlight and natural light versus our artificial light affects us. And this is something, and I remember even discussing learning, you know, in coursework, you know, through college. And, you know, it is but, you know, having these sensory issues with light and things being, you know, a sensory experience can definitely make one more at risk. But, you know, unfortunately, our the amount of light, you know, we receive, the light exposure, things like that, you know, do affect our mood, do affect our body's cycles. And but there's even so much to how the different cycles of the season affect us. But, you know, when seasons are kind of more chaotic and less easily defined, like we've seen this past year, and we've been seeing more increasingly so as climate change occurs in different ways, you know, this does, you know, have effect on people and their moods and things like that. And it was very interesting reading about this more and kind of understanding it too within my own experiences. And it's always great when, even when you start to, you know, you have this understanding of your own personal experience, but when you find information, data, and science that helps you understand it better, it's a level of clarity of just like, oh, okay, relief of understanding and comfort, where it's like, okay, even, yeah, I might be weird or messed up, but there's still a sense of comfort of like, okay, so but this is a thing other people experience. Okay. And so, you know, the seasons can definitely affect us, but there's so many different aspects of the way that temperature affects us and our nervous system and the way that our body acts. And this is regardless of whether or not you have sensory issues. You know, we're, but, you know, people with sensory issues just have more heightened, you know, sensory experiences. And sometimes that can also have more numbed, you know, sensory experiences, though, within it, where you're, you can become blind to something. And that's another aspect of sensory issues. But that still is, you know, an intense experience in its own way, because anybody can kind of become blind to sensory experiences at some point. They become distracted from it. But again, if you're somebody that's experiencing more intense blindness to sensory experience, that is an intense experience of sensory issues, just, you know, there's just two different sides of that spectrum, and people can fall within different sides of that in different ways. You know, it's not just one size fits all where, you know, somebody is entirely, you know, more sensory sensitive, while someone is more entirely sensory numb, you know, to things. Those are spectrums. It's, you know, we all have our own little individualized spectrum of what we're more sensitive to and what we're less sensitive to, or it can also just have nothing to do with the particular experience or thing and have more to do with the current state of one's nervous system, the current state in which one is in, and other factors at play. You know, these are complicated things. Nothing is one size fits all or easily defined. And unfortunately, it is natural for people want to easily, simply define things, you know, in nice, cut and dry, evenly squared out ways, and, you know, put things in little boxes. But that's not how humans work. Unfortunately, that's not how mental health works and how spectrums of things work. You know, everyone is going to exist along a spectrum, even those that have the same conditions. You know, we are not going to have the exact same experience with anything. Now, you can have maybe almost, you know, where it can seem like you have almost the exact same experience as someone, but we are still individual people that are still going to have our own differences in our experience in our lives, even as much as we can relate and understand other people. And I think that we just need to start, you know, collectively respecting each other's experiences, listening to each other, really understanding, engaging with each other. And understanding that nothing is a one-size-fits-all experience, and it's never going to be. And that is a huge aspect of barefooting. Barefooting is not a one-size-fits-all experience, and it's never going to be. And people barefoot for so many different reasons within their mental health, their physical health, emotional health, you know, for religious, spiritual, cultural, heritage reasons. You know, there are so many reasons why people barefoot, and there's so many things within our identities, within ourselves, that affect everything we do, every choice we make, every preference we have, in so many ways that we may not even realize, because it's just how we are, you know. And, you know, we are all different. We are all going to have our differences. And it's never going to be a one-size-fits-all journey or experience. And a part of that is just because of how diverse humans are. You know, we all have our own different experiences, our mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, social health and social environments and interactions, and, you know, different backgrounds of identity and things like that, that those all influence our individualized experiences and are thus going to influence our barefooting journeys, our barefooting experiences. It's not a one-size-fits-all journey. It's definitely something that is for you to be able to take the time to understand for yourself, understand your body, understand the ways that barefooting helps you, or understanding the times in which barefooting may not be helpful even, or safe, depending on the circumstances. And yes, there are general things that, like, aren't safe, like, you know, like, okay, chem lab, construction site, you know, you're on a building demolition project or something, you know, like, yeah. those are just general environments in which, you know, it's not going to be safe to barefoot because of the, you know, threats to safety in that environment. But at the same time, we all have our own internal aspects of emotional safety, mental safety, and physical safety. And sensory issues is tied into aspects of safety in ways that people don't understand. Overstimulation, it triggers the pain receptors in the brain. It creates pain when you are overstimulated and prolonged to overstimulation for a long time term, which can damage and does damage the nervous system. It deeply affects the nervous system, and that is a huge aspect of what led to my burnout and my decline. And when you are overworking your nervous system to the point that you are frying it, you're not helping yourself, you're not making yourself stronger, you are making yourself weaker, and you are attacking yourself, and now your body is attacking yourself further. And that is often what leads to developing autoimmune disease issues, is when your nervous system is under such attack with external forces, but also even internally, that it's attacking itself. And that could start from, you know, trauma and, you know, having existing sensory issues, nervous system issues with ADHD and autism that, you know, you are fueling. And this and different things can fuel this overstimulation and completely, you know, derail you under prolonged periods of time. When you really understand dysregulation of the nervous system, it's dangerous. And we don't just have, you know, we have our central nervous system, which is the main nervous system, but you also have your parasympathetic nervous system. How do I pronounce that other one? I'm going to butcher it. Okay. Not paraphernalia. That's what I keep wanting to say, and that's not the right word. Peripheral. Your peripheral. I'm trying to think how that would say that. It's not paraphernalia, but that's what my brain kept wanting to say. Your peripheral or peripheral, however you say it, nervous system. Yeah, there are at least 5 different types of nervous systems, but maybe 7 as well that are recognized. But the thing is nervous system is actually even way more complicated than that. But even what is the main recognized nervous system, it's a whole rabbit hole. But typically people do tend to recognize, you know, the 3 main nervous system that are brought up, which is, you know, your central nervous system, your sympathetic nervous system, and your parasympathetic nervous system. There are a lot of types, and it is a lot more complicated than I have the ability to explain, than I even have the expertise to explain, of course, because, you know, my education background, my research only goes so far. But there is a lot to the nervous system. It is nervous systems, and it's a lot more complicated than people realize. But I'm trying to remember, sorry, where I was going with this. There was there's like 5 other different things in my head. To tie this all together. But the thing is, you know, overstimulation is damaging. It's not just you're overwhelmed. Yes, it is a type of overwhelmed. It's not just that. It becomes something that creates real physical pain. It is something that under prolonged periods of exposure causes legit damage to the nervous system and can cause autoimmune disorders to develop. This is a pipeline connection that has been researched. Unfortunately, it's just not talked about or recognized enough in our society. And if something like being barefoot helps you from being overstimulated, to the point that it is causing physical pain and also causing damage to your nervous system, then that is a win. Let people be barefoot. Someone wearing shoes, as long as they're not in an environment that it's unsafe to barefoot, like legitimately, then you are just going to be causing more damage. Overstimulation from prolonged periods of time acts the way that trauma does to dysregulation in the nervous system. It destabilizes you. Having a meltdown is literally your nervous system experiencing a crash. Now, of course, there are way more different types of crashes and more even intensive crashes that can happen with the nervous system. Of course, nervous systems are way more complicated, but that's literally what a meltdown is. It is your nervous system experiencing a crash, and it's, and that can range in severity because of the dysregulation you're experiencing, and that causes damage. That can cause damage on the brain, can cause damage on the body. And this is a very real thing, unfortunately, that most people do not understand. And it is Autism and Awareness and Acceptance Month. But unfortunately, there is a long way to go before autism is fully understood and recognized and being approached in the ways it needs to, even in professional mental health. You know, as somebody that was misdiagnosed with a handful of conditions, and has now understood all the ways that that actually set me back, it has been a hard, painful process. And, you know, it is hard because people are always going to have their opinions about you. People are always going to feel the way that they do, but it is really important to focus on that journey of self, focusing on your sense of self for you, your identity, understanding your body and your mind for yourself, and really doing that internal work. It's important. Yes, it's important to, you know, be able to find information and data and go through proper channels of being able to understand yourself. But unfortunately, there has still been a lot of gaslighting, misunderstanding around autism, ADHD, and so many other conditions as well. But it is really important to take the time to really understand your personal experience. Take the time to journal and understand, you know, as you can, what you're feeling and what you're experiencing. Because analyzing your own internal experience is what's really going to help you be able to be less led astray. I look back and think about how, you know, people were able to define me and my experiences and myself because I didn't have as good of an understanding or the language around myself. And some of that is understanding my experiences has also included creating new language and words until I can sometimes, you know, there are times where I will, you know, create words and language to describe myself, finally having a way to identify it for myself. But then, you know, then you'll find, I'll find terms that validates and I find, oh, this is the term that people use for it. Or sometimes it's hard because it's still a process of finding language and terms that actually at all represent the experience within. And it can be frustrating, but really understanding your own internal experience, whatever you're going through, and taking that time to understand you and what you're experiencing, what it feels like, and just is a really important step to understanding ourselves. And let me cough real quick. Sorry, that was a nasty one because my sinuses, so I don't want to have y'all have to endure that. But understanding yourself is a really important aspect of a lot of things. I would definitely say with looking at my own experiences with my physical health and my mental health and being gaslighted, being misdiagnosed or having certain diagnoses put off until they were like, okay, fine, we're ready to finally face that this is what it is. And it's like, okay, thank you for making me run in circles for so many years, even though you already thought it was this, just for me to end up back here, you know? And what really, and it can be really hard for me. And I will say with my autism experiences, it makes it really easy for other people to define me and for me to allow other people to define me and take it personally as other people and how they want to define me and how they perceive me and what they think I am or how they think I should be defined. And unfortunately, that led to a lot of harm for me, blindly just going with whatever everyone labeled me as and told me was okay, and or told me what I was supposed to be feeling or how I was supposed to treat it. And that hurt me. And one key way of me treating a lot of my mental health issues was actually barefooting and understanding my stimulation and sensory issues, because I was experiencing a lot of mental health issues that I really wouldn't have had to if I had my sensory issues under control. And so having these sensory issues and this over, you know, with the, that becomes overstimulation, it'll trigger meltdowns, it'll trigger, you know, mental health issues and things like that that are going to arise because of the onset of your physical experience of overstimulation and your nervous system just being attacked, your nervous system being attacked by your sensory issues, by light, sound, sensations. You know, that is going to trigger, you know, things like that. And so something as simple as being barefoot can really help your mental health in those ways, as well as your physical health in those ways. And it's, you know, not a magic cure, but it's a coping tool. It's a coping mechanism. And unfortunately, when you have any kind of disability, you need as many coping mechanisms as you can get. You really do. And it's frustrating, you know, and even, you know, with chronic pain, mobility issues, things like that, like you need as many coping mechanisms as you can get. And it's not enough to have one or the other. You have to be able to pair those things. And, you know, barefooting is a coping mechanism that helps. But just like there are certain times for me with my sensory issues where I do unfortunately actually have to wear shoes, but I'm very particular about which ones or, and so there's so many different aspects to that, but that's my own personal experience in learning to regulate. And that's been something that's been weird recently for me is, you know, I went from always, you know, wearing shoes, because I had to, that it was creating so much overstimulation, it was causing so many mental health issues. I mean, I was having meltdowns every time I was going to my psychiatrist appointment in the parking lot, in the car on the way back, because I was so overstimulated while driving. It was so bright. I remember the time of year when it was hot and warm and not even just warm, just like hot. And so between the heat, with my sensory issues, between wearing shoes and the brightness, because, you know, I always wore sunglasses. I never wore sunglasses because I've always worn glasses and I never had, like, transitional lens. But now I have sunglasses that go over my glasses. All those things, I didn't understand that. I was having meltdown. I was having freakouts and what was going on. And as crazy as it sounds, but once I started really, like, understanding my sensory issues and the overstimulation aspect and how to accommodate for myself and how to self-regulate, it's made a huge difference in my mental health and in my physical health. And what I've recognized too is when I have those issues and those setbacks, it's because of too much exposure on my nervous system or too much overstimulation. And it is hard because it's a constant process of finding ways of how to accommodate for yourself. But also with autism, time for solitude, which is not the same thing as isolation, and it's very important to understand the difference between solitude and isolation is even its own factor of having to really relax and reset that nervous system. Too much becomes too much. You know, there are times in my brain and my existence where I need to slow down and process things. I've taken in too much data, and I can't think. I'm not going to make sense of things. I already can't think because of other reasons, right? So sometimes you just need to slow down and have solitude, which is not the same thing as isolation, and it can be its own process of, you know, balancing and understanding those. And sometimes my language, you know, usage, it can be hard for me to even accurately label the two because of, you know, struggling with apraxia of speech. It's a frustrating, very frustrating thing. And, I keep thinking about how I was supposed to run an ad break and how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to wrap up this thought before. Sorry. But really understanding my overstimulation and sensory issues, though, it really was tied into barefooting and things like that. And that does a lot to help, right? But there's only so much that, you know, even these coping mechanisms, you know, can do. And so, and again, it's a natural part of just needing a longer time to process things. I have to learn to respect that with my brain. And it's hard because I still struggle to actually give myself the time and space to do that. But, you know, it is important to slow down. But even too, having that need for solitude and slowing down sometimes on its own to allow yourself to catch up isn't enough. There's still other aspects of grounding and sensory and, you know, dopamine seeking, sensory seeking that come into play. And so for me, being able to have solitude and, you know, being able to barefoot in the woods and have that solitude and allow my brain to, you know, get that sensory seeking, get the benefits of barefooting and grounding. And not even just talking about, you know, the because of the overstimulation that shoes cause for me and for other people that are similar, but also because there are just general benefits to the nervous system and regulation of being barefoot and being in nature. Exposure to nature helps lower cortisol levels, which is the stress hormone, which is a key hormone or neurotransmitter in myalgia for me, but all chronic pain conditions, and as well as, you know, like my arthritis, osteoarthritis and whatnot, you know, things like that. But, you know, any condition I have, any condition other people have, cortisol is a huge hormone that is an aspect of that with chronic pain. And this is something that I had to, you know, learn. I learned directly in a, it was literally like, I remember taking a pain management class. It was literally a 6-week class. It was this, or not 6-week, 9-week. I literally was thinking 9 and looking at the number 9 in my head, but then my own brain flipped it. I love when I do that. Like, but no, I remember a 9-week program I had to take. I mean, it was a whole semester of school during, you know, my senior year where I had to take it was an inpatient program. And it's weird because I've been starting to remember a lot more about things in my life. Oh, gosh, not even think of, sorry, something else I remembered last night that I had forgotten about till then. Anyway, sorry. Oh, my God, my brain is all over the place. Yeah, it's weird how lately I've been remembering more chunks that I forgot. Sorry, that completely, my own brain distracts me. Anyway, but the pain management program and things like that, I know I've brought this up on the show before, going through this pain management program I did during my senior year of high school, when I had started, you know, having, by then I'd already started using a cane. I remember just, for 9 weeks having to go and talk to the same psychologist, and there was, and just realizing that all these weird experiences I had in my body with temperature and even, you know, my IBS and so many things, you know, having this, clinical psychologist, you know, with her expertise in pain and management, really explaining that even, you know, all these different things are related to the nervous system and actually to chronic pain. And it was crazy. And then to understand the role of cortisol and how that affects, there are so many complex factors going in the body, and being in nature and also barefooting are things that can help lower cortisol levels. And I'm not saying that it's like, a magical cure or anything, but it's a coping mechanism. It's a coping tool. And there are so many different aspects of our nervous system we have to really take into consideration when understanding chronic pain and as well, because a lot of people, what people don't understand is that chronic pain, when you're in that much chronic pain, your body is now releasing all these different stress-related, pain-related hormones that it normally would not be releasing. And this and having all these influx of hormones and neurotransmitters that are not normal to be experiencing, it does affect the brain and the body, and it does affect you physiologically. This is something I had to learn, as a patient, as a student within this program, to really understand myself. And it's honestly something that I'm very grateful for. And I know I've talked about it on the show before, but, you know, I definitely recommend meeting with, you know, pain, an actual, like, pain management psychologist, you know, if to learn more, if that is something that you need and is accessible to you, because it did help me a lot when I was in my senior year of high school, and that was a huge aspect of really helping me learn to regulate things. But a lot I've had to build upon that, taking what that you know, pain pain management clinical psychologist had you know, taught me about my nervous system and about what I was experiencing, and then having to find coping mechanisms that go alongside the data and information and research that helped me, especially because being so young, I wasn't able to, and still am not really, like, able to get treatments and things like that because of, oh, well, the way, you know, the way it could affect my brain and my brain development, things like that. And, you know, because of the way that fibromyalgia is neurological, but at the same time, with sensory issues and overstimulation with fibromyalgia, these things, you know, being neurological, these things really do have a real impact on your nervous system and can be damaging. And this was something that I had to definitely learn, you know, from that pain psychologist, and I'm grateful for. But at the same time, it's not a one-size-fits-all journey, you know, with barefooting being a coping mechanism and coping skill for people. And there are so many different reasons in which people use it as a, you know, coping mechanism and tool. So it definitely is not a one-size-fits-all journey by any means, but, you know, it is a valid coping skill, and it does have its value. And I've been, you know, even I've been getting really frustrated lately where I'm like, I'm ready to just, for the weather to be ready so that my body can barefoot full time, because there are too many issues with the cold, with my fibro and other sensory issues and things with my ADHD and autism, make it really hard for my body to be able to. And it can be really frustrating, and I know I'm ready because there's also all these frustrating aspects of being barefoot and of not being able to be barefoot and wearing shoes. Just like, you know, there are frustrating aspects of my own personal, you know, disability experiences with being barefoot in the cold. And, you know, and it's definitely a constant up and down of trying to balance it and manage it. But that doesn't make barefooting any less of a coping mechanism and anything like that. And so, or any less of something that is important that I'm just screaming to be able to do inside. And so, you know, it is important to recognize that these are real coping skills and tools. And if your shoes are causing you overstimulation, this is causing you damage, you know. And of course, some more than others, depending on how severe it is, how severe, you know, other stressors and factors in your nervous system are, how severe your experience is within your condition, like, you know, how severe it is. But I do really encourage people to take the time to reflect on your own journey, start listening to your body and your mind, understanding your sensory experiences, understanding your barefooting, understanding your mental and emotional health, you know, taking this time to journal and really understand and give yourself permission to feel what you feel and understand what you feel, regardless of other people's policing and saying what you're allowed to feel or what you should be feeling. And it can be very frustrating when you're trying to explain your experiences and other people, you know, mislabel them, and you're trying to explain it and they think they understand it. You're like, and you know for a fact they don't, but you don't know how to explain it any clearer within your own internal experience because you don't have the ability to, whether that be because of a cognitive reason or whatever reason. But it can be very hard to advocate for yourself, especially if you are someone with disabilities, but it can be hard to advocate for yourself if you're someone with trauma. And so, you know, it can be frustrating when, you know, understanding your internal experiences and when you think that other people, you're able to explain them or other people are understanding and they don't. And sometimes people come with their own level of not understanding that you're not going to be able to break through that. And there really does feel like no point in explaining yourself, because it's just going to be an argument and a debate. Your existence is just going to be argued and debated rather than people taking the time to actually listen and understand your experience. And it is important to reflect within and understand that. And, you know, most of my life I did, put myself in situations of being debated and argued, and, you know, in allowing other people to define these things for me, and in ways that I wasn't understood, but I was blindly like, well, okay, that sounds right. That sounds good. I guess you know what you're talking about. And unfortunately, you know, even with my own experience with diagnoses, which is a very common thing, you know, I didn't understand my own experience, my internal experience enough. I went with, okay, you must know what you're talking about and must understand 100% fully because of your expertise. I trust you blindly that, yes, data, information, you know, research, and that is something that is super crucial and valid, and we need to go through channels of being able to properly understand, identify, and diagnose these things. But if you do not know your own internal experience, other people are not going to really be able to understand you if, because you, and, you know, I would say, especially with my autism, all the ways that I was feeding into other people mislabeling and misdiagnosing me, because I was just blindly following and going with, like, well, okay. And being like, well, that makes sense with, you know, data and things like that. And, but it didn't actually reflect what I was trying to explain to people. It didn't actually reflect the information. They were just applying based upon what sounded close enough. And I was basing it upon what sounded close enough. And that was me as an impersonal person, you know, experience. And also as from psychiatrists that, and other professionals that were like applying what was close enough to my experiences, because I didn't fully have the language and understanding of myself to explain myself. And I still struggle with it because of disability cognitive reasons. Even now, believe me, I wish I could explain everything way much more in depth than I'm able to at the moment, or have been for a while. You know, really taking the time to understand your internal personal experience is powerful, and it is important, because that is what is going to help you easily identify and understand yourself more correctly and other people, is taking that time to journal, understand what are you feeling, what are you experiencing, and understanding it as your own words and your own language, and even and go from there. But it can also be frustrating, because the way I used to describe my internal experiences, even my psychiatrist would be like, wow, you talk like poetry. And I was like, no, I'm trying to explain an experience there are no words for that you're not even understanding now, because what, you're saying that me describing my mental health is like poetry? No, and that's how you misidentified me, you know, because you took what I was saying as poetry rather than it me being trying to explain an experience that I can't explain and there isn't good language around. And so, yeah, maybe even analyze those more poetic thoughts you have more. And, you know, taking that time to really understand your mind, your physical body, and how barefooting and other coping tools and things like that really help you is really important in understanding yourself. But what I found is if you don't understand yourself, other people can't understand you, unfortunately, and at least from my experience. And personally, I do think that is, you know, more so true with autism, because it's not talked about or understood or recognized enough that it is very controversial. Even when it's the real ass truth, it's controversial because people do not have the understanding around it in society on a general, collective, general level, and have it for a long time. And a lot of the people like myself that, you know, we were just labeled as quirky, problematic, weirdos, creepy even. Like, who knows what's wrong with them? We were labeled as a problem. You know, we were just born that way. And we were looked at that way. There's just something wrong with us innately from the moment we were born. There's just something wrong with us. And we never understood it. Every little thing we did, every little thing, every noise we made, the way that we talked, the way that we sometimes didn't talk correctly, the way that we would have our own opinions, and it is, and the way that we would view the world, or just different disability symptoms and things like that, having meltdowns. You know, I remember my partner at the time, he remembers the first time watching me kind of have a meltdown, and it was where I was angry, and my mom was there, and her response was just like, oh, she does that. Because he was like, oh, is she okay? And he was like, oh, she does that. And, like, it's okay. Like, it'll pass. And, you know, and, but I remember just not having the support and understanding I needed, where even when I would do it, people were like, ah, she does that. But I was regarded often and as a demon, some kind of feral creature, because people did not understand. And unfortunately, a lot of people want someone to bully. They want someone to grab on. And, you know, and that's unfortunately a societal thing. And that's why so many people have been labeled with harmful labels and ideas, when it's like, because they're being expected to be a neurotypical person when they're clearly not. People are putting labels on them, even if they're not, even if they're just harmful social labels that are clearly showing that this person is okay, then clearly they're not neurotypical, right? Even you're putting all these labels on them. They're a weirdo. You know, for, you know, and then I'm not talking because of any actual harmful, creepy things. I'm just talking about, like, they're just weird, their interests, their things, their hobbies, the way they act, like, you know, they're just a weirdo, they're just a creep. Like, oh my God, there's something wrong with them. You're literally saying right there that they're not neurotypical. But yet, you can't admit that or handle that. There could actually be something wrong with them, because society has told you and taught you that there's something wrong with them, that acceptable as it's a legit diagnosis. It's something wrong with them, as in they shouldn't be allowed to be alive like this. And that's what people don't understand. And I am saying this as somebody who experienced it all my entire life, every little thing, and having to learn. I have been clearly labeled as not neurotypical my entire life, even before I got my misdiagnoses. Before that, right? And but people want someone that they can bully and they can pick upon, because it makes them feel better. And we live in a social system that is ableist and harmful and doesn't allow people to be themselves. So, of course, there are a lot of neurotypical people in society that get a boost out of being able to tear down and harm people, and not recognize them as neurodivergent, but they also just didn't recognize them as their problem, because it makes them feel better. Because also, too, if they have to recognize and take the moment to realize that they're being ableist, then they can't handle that with themselves. And they have to realize that they're the one who's being the problem. They're the one that has to go do the work. They're the one that's being the ass, or the jerk. Sorry. They're the one that's being the jerk, you know? And unfortunately, this is such a thing embedded within society and embedded within our social exchanges and things like that. And it's so funny to me, you know, the pipeline or, you know, mold stereotype that even I'm a part of, you know. And we were often mislabeled as things like weird and quirky, manic pixie dream girl, ugh, or manic pixie nightmare, you know. And we were idolized and demonized at the same time because of all the amazing ways with our, you know, way our brains are wired, all the amazing ways we were praised, but then all of the disabilities we were demonized. But the praise never outweighed the demonization, ever, because of the ableism within our society. And often the praise that we received was from harming ourselves, really, from pushing ourselves to a breaking point and harming ourselves to other people. And I do want to talk about this because it is Autism Awareness Month, and this has been a lot on my mind lately as I've been, you know, just reflecting on my own experiences and talking even with, like, my partner a lot about how it's like, this is obvious the whole time. It was literally right in front of our faces. And the way I communicate, the way that I can be even sometimes very cold and scientific and overly logical, but at the same time, an overly empathetic person, because, you know, within my experience of that hyper connectivity, I do have very intense experiences with my emotions, and, you know, and people can struggle and understand that, both of those. And barefooting, though, is a huge aspect of me understanding my sensory issues, my stimulation issues, And it's crazy because once I really got my, sensory stimulation issues more and more under control, my health did get better mentally and physically. And it's still a journey, And so whatever coping tools help you, with your disabilities and stuff like that, as long as they're not causing harm to you, keep doing it. And it doesn't matter what other people think about it. It doesn't matter what other people's opinions are, okay? Like, this world is full of ableist crap. So who cares? If it's something that helps your disability and you're taking care of yourself and your disabilities and your chronic illnesses and things like that, just everyone else's ableism needs to just shut up, honestly. Because at the end of the day, that's all it is. And you doing what you need to do to take care of yourself is so much more important than ableist opinions. It's actually more important than probably anyone's opinion. As long as you're not causing harm and you're just taking care of yourself, like, come on. It don't even matter. I mean, honestly, it's more worthy than even a good supportive opinion. Like, at that point, because your life matters, or all our lives matter. And so everyone out there, your life, matters, and you deserve to take care of yourself. And I get it. There's a lot of misconceptions around, barefooting as a legitimate coping tool, a legitimate accommodation, a legitimate tool, coping mechanism. Yeah. And but there are no laws or health codes against barefooting in the United States. There never have been. There was no shirt, no shoes, or well, I don't know about the no shirt part, but the no shoes, no service sign is illegal. It is illegal for them to have those signs. Barefooting is an accommodation. It is an accommodation for many different chronic illnesses and disabilities. And that is physical as well as neurodivergent. It is accommodation for ADHD and autism. But again, it is not one size fits all because of sensory experiences. And those experiences are spectrums that are very diverse and complicated, just like people, we're all very diverse and complicated. So it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all journey for anyone. But remember that your barefooting in it is valid. It has a place in this world. It has a place in your life. It has a place for you. Your coping mechanisms, your coping tools, they have a place in your life for you. And I do encourage people to just really take that time to push past other people's ideas, expectations, obligations with your disabilities, and really just focusing on what do you need? What do you need? What do you know takes care of you? Because it doesn't matter what other people really see or say, because they don't know your internal experience. They don't. No one will ever do well, So if as long as it's not causing, like harm to you, whatever your coping tools and mechanisms are, as long as it's not endangering you, do what you got to do, and take care of yourself. There is nothing wrong with you being barefoot. There's nothing morally or legally wrong with it. There's nothing inherently sexual about it, but unfortunately people have those opinions. And you know what? Let them. At the end of the day, we're not doing anything wrong. We are living our best barefoot lifestyle, right? And that's all we can do. And even too with like the barefooting, people want to label people, like I was saying before, people just want someone to kind of bully on, as I can understand that with my autism. People want someone to bully on. People want someone who's an easy target. People want to be able to just label someone as a weirdo or, oh, you're creepy or you're weird or you're just, oh, you're quirky or you're just damaged. And you've been that way since birth. But it can't be because you're neurodivergent, even though I'm constantly saying you're neurodivergent just without saying it. I love hypocrisy. People want to put these labels because a lot of people suck. A lot of people want to feel better about themselves when they can police and grade someone else on whether or not they're being a good human in arbitrary ableist ways. It makes them feel better. It really does, unfortunately, because there are a lot of really just cruel people out there. And unfortunately, a lot of them, too, are neurotypical people that can't admit that there's a problem with neurotypical society, so they just want to go ahead and find harmful ways of making themselves feel better. And, you know, and like, because that's the thing too, is I think it's dangerous how we look at all cruelty and evil, even too, as something it's like, oh, this person has to be sociopathic or something, which is harmful within itself, because like you're assuming they have to be neurodivergent. And I think it's very interesting, you know, there's a lot of there's information, you know, there's like actual data out there on like Nazi scientists during World War II, and not just Nazi scientists, there were psychiatric evaluations done on these Nazi soldiers. Most of them, like the vast majority, were neurotypical. But unfortunately, people nowadays want to use that as an excuse. Oh, they must have been neurodivergent, had some condition, to use it as an excuse for evil and cruelty. It isn't. You know, like there are people, yes, that have legitimate conditions that need help and can struggle with, you know, antisocial disorders and things like that. And people who want to get help for them. At the same time, we cannot equate all cruelty, all evil to neurodivergency. Unfortunately, we can't. And because some people just choose to do bad things. And believe me, that's a hard reality for me to accept, because I'm somebody that wants to find a reason and for everything. I'm what I do. It's just the way I'm wired. I want to find a reason for everything, but I also have empathy and, you know, behind my reasons and or sympathy or whatever. You know, I have that behind my reasons because I want to understand people and I want other people to get the help and, you know, resources they need, just like I want that for me and I've wanted that my entire life. And, you know, so it's like, and yeah, creating gaslighting and accessibility issues can create their own barriers. But, you know, we need to remember that we cannot just equate that, because it is harmful. And a lot of people are just crappy and they are doing it to make themselves feel good about themselves, but that doesn't excuse it as a legit mental illness. Sometimes it's just people wanting to make themselves feel better because they're crappy. And we need to remove ourselves from those opinions, because a lot of people who are just crappy are ableist, you know, and they want an easy target. They want someone to take it out on, whether it's a cognitive disability or a physical disability or any way they can try to police you, you know, and you have to remove yourself from that. And there is a lot of that within society. And of course, not everyone who does that either is, you know, neurotypical either, but I'm just saying we have to recognize a lot of that. And that's something I've been reflecting upon a lot with like looking at my childhood and my experiences and things like that. And barefooting and understanding why I always wanted to be barefoot. A lot of that goes to my sensory issues and that existed way before I even developed fibromyalgia, and understanding, you know, I really understand my ADHD and autism, which I mean, literally everyone in my life, my mom, you know, I remember as soon as I told her, she was like, oh my God, your whole childhood makes so much more sense. And it's been an ongoing journey. And every time we talk, she's like apologizing. I'm sorry, I didn't know sooner. I should have, you know, like it's, how didn't I, you know? And so it's weird to me though, how barefooting is off, you know, such a, I think, a gateway to understanding your sensory issues and understanding yourself, because of the way that it has to do with understanding your body. That's not saying like you take off your shoes and it's magical, but I mean, like experience right away, which actually for a lot of people have said in a way it is, you know, from their own internal experience where it feels that way, you know, but at the same time, again, it's not like a magical cure. You're suddenly understand and have all the information yourself, but taking that time to develop a relationship with your body and your mind through like really taking that time to, well, first of all, just do something that's controversial, right? That's not accepted, even though there are no laws or health codes against barefooting, but there's still a lot of social stigma against it, even though there have never been any laws or health codes against it, just propaganda and bigotry. And most of it rooted in racism, unfortunately. Yeah, against Black people and Indigenous people in America or in the Turtle Island, the more accurate term, but, you know, what we call America, you know, that was a huge aspect of it. Classism,
being classist against poor people, hating poor people, that was who couldn't afford shoes, huge aspect of it. Again, disabilities, people, again, and especially too, if you have disabilities, probably more likely to be poor, even if it, or your family was, even still to this day, if you're disabled, you're more likely to be poor or your family is, because it does cost more to be disabled. I mean, if you just look at medical costs, the cost of things to take care of yourself, even things that aren't even considered legitimate medical treatment necessarily. There are a lot of things that, you know, we have to find ways of being able to, and what I mean by like legit medical treatment in terms of like insurance could cover or pay for it. But there are things that are, you know, like things like that, like doctor, you know, can, you know, even recommend supplements. And there are some supplements, like when I had to be prescribed vitamin D, like I was able to get that, like, where at a cheaper rate because of like insurance and stuff like that. But even things like that, but like supplements and things like that even, you know, play a huge role in a lot of autoimmune disorders and things like that. And some of those, you know, you can get actually with, and so, you know, for more affordable with insurance, actually going through your doctor. So if it's something you don't know, and there's certain like supplements that you do actually need, and your doctor can even verify that you need them, and it's nothing already, I would talk about trying to see if you can, you know, get those plus those supplements specifically subscribed to you, prescribed to you. If you're someone that's taking them, you know, with your doctor, having them prescribe it, that we can get cheaper with insurance, because it can help. But at the same time, there's some supplements and some things that are a legit part of like treating things like that. And even doctors have recommended or would recommend, and you know, different medical things. Where my brain is not forming words the way that I am trying to right now. God, I'm sorry. I'm getting frustrated with myself. And I just realized I forgot to take the advocate two and then one at 2:30. So I might actually do one real quick for my brain's sake. But you know what I mean? There are certain things where even too, it's like having the electric massager is very key for my muscles with my entire body, with my disabilities and things like that. Right. And so, but that's not something that I, you know, it's something I still have to have my, you know, partner put money out of pocket for to be able to buy, you know. And there are certain things like that where it can be very frustrating, you know. And so it's just really important to remember that all of this is all interconnected. And I know I get all over the place and it seems like I'm all over the place in the show and I can sometimes have a hard time connecting things, but it's all interconnected. Ableism and barefooting and that journey of overcoming ableism and understanding yourself through barefooting, understanding your body and your mind and how understanding that is important to treat yourself, but it's also, you know, important for other people to understand you. And, sorry guys, I'm trying today. I'm gonna be honest. My vision is trying to fight it off that I've got stars and spots everywhere. Love it. My brain's reaching. So we're going to take a quick ad break and then try to finish up the show. And I'm fine, guys. I'm going to be honest. I not being able to see because of stars and spots is like a common thing that like I learned to work around it. So, sorry, my brain is a little bit mess, more than a little bit. But we're going to run a quick ad break. I hope my rambles make sense. Keep living your best barefoot lifestyle, and I'll be back after the break. This is Barefoot is Legal Radio. That's what I actually meant to say, not living your best barefoot. Okay, I'm going to take a break. I'm sorry.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny.
A little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like...
But what? Why wouldn't you do? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Earthing, also known as grounding, is the act of touching our body's skin directly to the earth, just like our ancestors did as they slept, sat, and walked on the ground nearly every day of their lives. This simple connection allows Earth's natural negative electrons to enter the human body, pacifying dangerous free radicals, which, if left unchecked, can cause severe damage to cells that can lead to many chronic diseases. Ground Therapy's patented process and suite of products were designed for you to experience all the benefits of grounding in your busy and modern lifestyle. And you'll experience the benefits of grounding within the safety and comfort of your home or office throughout the entire day, just as if you were touching the earth itself.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Hello, everyone. I want to introduce you to our friends at Marty.com. At Marty, you can stock up on all your pantry items and other household items for way, way cheaper than traditional grocery stores. I like that most of the items are organic. Also, I really dig their 1 cent deal of the day. It changes every single day. I recently snagged a 10-ounce bag of dog treats for Chewbacca for a penny. Normally, they sell on their site for $7.99. With the upcoming food shortages, this is my favorite place to stock up on canned goods. If you live in the mountain or Pacific time zones, you need to get with Marty.com, M-A-R-T-I-E.com. Look for our link on our FreedomizerRadio.com website and get a $10 free just because I told you to go there. Marty.com. Great deals, good feels.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny.
A little weird. But when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores.
It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like...
But what? Why wouldn't you do? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Hello, folks. We are back with Barefoot is Legal Radio. Barefoot is Legal is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the rights and legalities of living the barefoot lifestyle, as well as other general information, support, and aspects of living the barefoot lifestyle. barefooting is not a one-size-fits-all journey by any means. It is definitely a process, you know, to work into. So, you know, if you're somebody that is new to this, you know, take it at your own pace, listen to your body to the best of your ability. I understand that, you know, with different conditions, there can be issues with, you know, receiving and understanding all the signals and things, experiences going on in our bodies. And so, you know, whether, you know, that be nerve damage, some kind of neurological issue, sensory issue, or any other type of condition that, you know, can cause issues with being able to receive those signals of what's going on in your body, or, you know, really, or understanding what those signals mean, it can definitely be a lot harder to just listen to your body. And believe me, I can understand that a lot in my own ways. But you know, I know that there are definitely people that have, you know, more intense experiences with struggling with those things. And it can definitely be hard. And so, you know, I do always want to acknowledge that, because it is ableist to assume that everyone can just listen to their body. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. And also it takes time in general to be able to really understand what's going on in our bodies, especially if we are experiencing chronic illness and disability. And it's a frustrating journey. It's a journey in general to work through these things. But barefooting is a legit accommodation for many different chronic illnesses and disabilities. And it's a lot safer than most people think. And I think what people forget is the more that you do it, the more your feet adapt to barefooting, the more your feet will build up a tolerance and will be able to adapt. And unfortunately, there are a lot of stigmas and problems and issues that people have, you know, around barefooting. And I think it's important to remember this is rooted in fear. Fear is just such a tricky thing, tricky poison, you know. And, you know, it's something that drives a lot of our behaviors and is a huge internal force that is driving us. And this is something, unfortunately, takes a lot of time to work through. And it takes time. It really does. And unfortunately, a lot of people haven't worked through their fears around barefooting, you know. But a lot of people, you know, also just haven't been exposed to information and things like that to show that barefooting is safer than they think, or they haven't been shown things that challenge that fear and that schema and that belief system in their minds, right? And so you being barefoot and existing in the world barefoot, it naturally challenges that. And naturally challenging something that's rooted in someone's belief system is going to create some dissonance. It's going to create some, what's the best word I can come up with? Just because I love that word and the way it sounds. Dissonance, you know, it's just one word, but like, you know, it's just like you're going against the grain, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. You're going against the grain of what someone believes. So yeah, it's going to create some friction, I guess, would be another good way to put it. So, you know, don't take everything people say personally, especially strangers on the street that are going to have opinions about your barefooting. Your existence is a part of, exposure, you know, it's a part of representation. You are exposing them to the reality that people are barefoot and it's safe for them to do, and people have reasons why they need a barefoot. And it's important to recognize that barefooting is a real legitimate accommodation for many people, because if we don't, we're just being ableist and we are just harming people with disabilities, you know. And unfortunately, there is, you know, still a lot of research and understanding to be done around barefooting, but there is still a lot more out there than people realize. There's a lot more information on grounding than people realize, because it's not something that we talk about. It's not something that is shared, or, you know, it's often just kind of labeled as crazy. And I mean, it's just kind of the irony of our world is, I think when you get into certain levels of science, it all sounds crazy, right? I mean, even if you look into like different, like declassified CIA government experiments and stuff like that that are legit, like open information to the public that have been released as public information under like declassification acts and different one, different declassification acts and stuff. Again, if you start just talking about that stuff to people that have no idea what you're talking about, you sound absolutely crazy, and you're going to sound absolutely crazy. And it's kind of just the same thing even with barefooting and grounding and things like that. But if we really want to value astronomy and higher level sciences that are looking at, you know, the way the planets interact and energy and all these big cosmic forces and things like that, we also need to consider that we are a part of these things. And okay, again, in higher level science, like in astronomy and things like that, it's recognized that how widespread electromagnetic radiation is, it's a spectrum. Only a small amount of it can we visibly see. And then there are other tools and stuff to be able to see other aspects of that. But it's a very widely recognized that pretty much everything's just electromagnetic radiation. And but yet it's so hard for people to consider the, and it's, oh, and it's also recognized, in psychology that, and mental health, that our brains are electrical. There's electrical activity in physical medical health. It's recognized there is electrical activity. That's literally what the neuron signals are. Your heart, our hearts and our brains are two of the most electrical parts of our bodies. And, you know, and we can recognize electromagnetic fields, electromagnetic energy everywhere, right? But why is it so crazy to then to take it a step further when there is research and information that shows that grounding does have a positive effect on the body by grounding all that excessive electrical energy in the body? And those free radicals that cause harm. Why is it so crazy that it's putting this for you and healthy for you? And we have got just got a 90-second warning, so this is, I guess, a hot take or whatever, or I don't even really, if we're being honest, but whatever, we're about to put at the very end. But the thing is there is, when you really get in higher level science, it's recognized there's electromagnetic radiation everywhere, right? We're made up of electromagnetic radiation. We have electrical activity in our brains and our bodies. Why is it so crazy that the ground shows that grounding excessive electrical energy in the body that has been linked to inflammation, autoimmune disease, and other issues, and grounding that is safe and healthy and a legitimate science, a legitimate coping mechanism? But let's be honest, why? Because it's not as profitable as other things. And unfortunately, we do live in a system in which our medical care is often about profit. And that is something that people with chronic illnesses and disabilities especially do have to face and realize. But unfortunately, there is a lot of people realizing more and more that healthcare is just completely unaffordable for them, which is just sad, even people that do not qualify for accessible, affordable healthcare. So, yeah, unfortunately, just listen to your body and do the best you can, take care of yourself. Of course, yes, seek medical professional help for what you need, but listen to your body and keep living your best barefoot lifestyle. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.